Well, good morning and welcome back to the Broadcast Retirement Network. I'm Jeff Snyder and this is BRN AM for Thursday, October 15th, 2020. And our top story today, insights for success of state-run retirement programs. Joining me now to discuss this and a lot more is Andrea Fierstein. She's the Managing Director of AKF Consulting. Andrea, thanks so much for joining us on the program this morning.
Thank you so much for having me, Jeff. I'm really delighted to be here with you and your audience today.
Yeah, we're excited. And what really I thought was really piqued my interest was a recent report that you and your firm just authored around state-run retirement programs. This is something that we have covered over the last year and prior to that on our podcast. Very interesting. And I wanted to invite you on to talk about some of the findings. So do tell. Tell us what you have uncovered with respect to these state-run initiatives.
Great. Thank you for that, Jeff. And we have focused on this state-run retirement market because we see the states really as leaders, you know, in pushing forth these efforts to really help solve a looming crisis. Not only do we have people who aren't saving for retirement now, but when you think about it from the state perspective, if you have people who haven't saved for retirement, that's just a huge pressure on your fist, right? And your public funding years down the road. So we've been following this market. We're delighted to be working with California, Illinois, Connecticut, and Maryland. But so we see this market, the really three basic models, Jeff. I mean, we've seen the auto IRA model, which is definitely the model that is trending and that more states choose. But the multiple employer plan model is alive and well in Massachusetts. We'll see Vermont soon. And we have a marketplace model that is also up and running in Washington state. But again, I think the key thing is we see this leadership by the states that they are getting ahead of the curve and trying to solve a crisis that they're just going to have to face down the road. Very much like what they did with college savings, I have to say.
Yeah. And I was going to, I mean, that's a perfect segue, and you have a lot of experience, as we were talking offline, about in the municipal space, and you spent a lot of your career doing that. And when you founded your organization, you focused on 529. What's the parallel here when you're looking, you take a step back and someone who, like yourself and your colleagues, have been working in 529, really building that up. It's grown significantly. We had the passage of ABLE, which helps those who are disabled. What are some parallels there between the two markets?
Sure, thanks. Actually, I sort of alluded to it when we look at the 529 market, you know, it really began, the precursor to Section 529 were the states that created prepaid tuition plans back in 1988 and 1989. Interestingly enough, it was a challenge in the tax court that ruled against the state of Michigan, which ultimately led, interestingly enough, Senator McConnell from Kentucky and Senator Graham from Florida to create Section 529 in the 1996 Tax Act. So again, leadership by the states, what they saw in the late 80s and early 90s was that college tuition inflation was rampant and it would be very difficult for people to afford to send their kids to college. So the states created the solution. Fast forward to 2013 or 12, when California first started talking about this, right? They had that same vision that there was an issue that they needed to solve for their, you know, their residents. So I see that analogy. And yes, I am eternally hopeful that at some point, as we see more states roll out these plans, regardless of what the nature of the plan is, whether it's a marketplace, a MEP, or an auto IRA, I mean, I'm hopeful that the feds will craft a solution for us to enable these plans to go forward. So again, first analogy is recognizing the need. Second analogy, and we can talk about this more in a minute, if you're interested, is just the ABLE plans. So the plans that the states have launched to help people with disabilities save. It's founded in the federal tax code, but it is built very much along the line of what a 529 plan is. And where I think ABLE offers some possibilities for us on the retirement side is that we've seen great collaboration across the states. So states have partnered and been able to provide a more cost-effective solution for saving. So I think if we can take that analogy and apply it to retirement, you know, we've really done a lot for the state-run plans.
And I was going to say, states are the laboratory of democracy. We often hear that. And you mentioned ABLE. Are you seeing today states, you know, the states like Oregon and California with CalSAVERS, some of the states that are coming online, Maryland, Connecticut, others, where they're trying to leverage best practices and plan designs that make sense, and then trying to find ways operationally, because as you mentioned, under 529, it's my understanding that some of the smaller states are leveraging some of the infrastructure that exists for some of the larger states. Is that something that you're seeing today?
So let me start with the best practices question first. So we do know, you know, Oregon, California, Illinois led, you know, they're what I kind of call first generation on the auto IRA side, along with Massachusetts on the MEP side and Washington on the marketplace. Best practices are established by virtue of the fact that those plans have been up and running right now for 3 years in the case of Oregon. I think there's great discourse and discussion between the states, between those plans that are up and running and the pipeline states. So to the extent there are best practices that those states have discovered, I think there's a great sense of sharing that information with the pipeline states. I know there's a kind of a constant communication between my clients, let's say in Maryland and Connecticut, with the folks in California, Oregon, and Illinois on the auto IRA side. So I do think there has been that sharing from that perspective. With respect to plan design, what I like to think is that what will come with Connecticut and Maryland will sort of be version 2.0, right? Because version 1.0 was great. We've learned a lot of lessons from 1.0, and I think we'll see something, you know, these evolve in a way that takes advantage of the lessons, takes advantage of the successes, and just pushes it maybe a little bit further. So I hope that addresses that side of it. In terms of plan design, where we see states kind of accessing, I think that was how you put it, we see that much more on the ABLE side, where let's say, you know, you have the state of Delaware that's part of an alliance with Illinois and Pennsylvania, you know, two and even New Jersey, much larger states. But because of that collaboration, Delaware, a very small state, is delivering to its constituents a product at the cost that sort of represents the whole population and takes advantage of all the plan design features that, again, much larger states have been able to put together and negotiate. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's a smart business to be able to leverage what other people are doing. Well, Andrea, I want to take a quick break, but we come back. We're going to talk more about this report and some of the other information that's provided. So you're going to want to stay tuned right here on VRN. But if you're tired, they're the same old story. Imagine a new television network that will make you richer, healthier, and in control of your financial future. This network is for the policewoman in Nashville, Tennessee, the baker in Dubuque, Iowa, the teacher in Lexington, Kentucky. We want to make the idea of savings and retirement culturally relevant. But what do you see as a defining issue of the midterms? Especially for the smaller businesses, I mean, they are the lifeblood of the American economy. Featuring exclusive interviews, current affairs, and docuseries. 33 years old, you retired early.
The philosophy is money only matters if it helps you live a life that you love.
But you got to start thinking about retirement as soon as you get in.
The Broadcast Retirement Network will drive very high engagement with premium partnerships. So this isn't retirement and savings for your parents or grandparents. This is for all Americans. And we're going to change the way you think about money. Welcome to the next frontier of retirement and savings. This is BRN, the Broadcast Retirement Network.
The windows on our homes, they protect us and the ones we love, but they do much more. At Renewal by Andersen, making your home more comfortable is at the center of every window we make. It's why we custom build our windows in America and install them in as little as one day. It's why we build our frames with exclusive Fibrex composite material that's 2 times stronger than vinyl. It's why our glass helps keep your home warmer in winter, cooler in summer, and quieter all year long. It's why we stand behind every window with a 20-year limited warranty. Why not help lower your energy costs while giving your home and family the best? Call 1-800-835-6525 to schedule a free in-home consultation. Buy one, get one at 40% off with this special offer. Plus, get special financing with no money down, no monthly payments, and no interest for one full year. Renewal by Andersen, the better way to a better window. Call 1-800-835-6525 now.
Welcome back. We're joined this morning by Andrea Fierstein. She is the Managing Director for AKF Consulting. Andrea, thanks so much for staying with us this morning.
Thanks for having me.
So let's talk about the experience. California, Oregon, Illinois are some of the more very well known, and they've been around for longer. But what has been the general experience of participants, the term in terms of asset growth, in terms of diversification?
So what I would say with respect to participants, let me just talk about the growth of the plans, maybe, if that's okay, Jeff.
I mean, sure.
You know, we're the market today, more or less, it's about 117 million in assets under management. I would say about half of that right now is in Oregon, which is the longest. Half of it is in Oregon, which is the longest standing program. It preceded, I think, even the issuance or the launch of Massachusetts. So the truth is, you know, I think it's an early start. But I think we feel good about those numbers. I mean, particularly you had Katie Solensky on about a couple of weeks ago, maybe last month. And I think she talked about the approaching deadline, right? This first deadline for employer participation. And I think what's great is that, you know, we saw a jump in the number of employers registered for the plan in California by 56%. I mean, so I think that we are just seeing the beginnings of the growth. And I'm very optimistic about it. I mean, I watch what the outreach teams are doing, or at least I hear about it anecdotally, what the outreach teams are doing and what the states are doing to really get the word out. And so I think the participants are being, you know, I'd like to think they're all having a good experience with it, and they're seeing the value. So again, first you begin at that employer level, which is so critical to exposing the employees to it. But I'm very optimistic about what we're seeing, particularly coming through this pandemic, still being in it, and not, you know, not really seeing, I don't believe or perceive to be a decrease necessarily in the enrollments or even a huge spike in withdrawals, you know, emergency withdrawals. So I hope that conveys my optimism about it and my sense that we're going to see this market grow very quickly as we see more and more California employers come online.
And in terms of governance, and let's talk a little bit about that, uh-huh. Because I think it's very similar. I want to get your thoughts on this. Very similar to what a 529 governance structure is. I mean, or a retirement plan, a general, like a defined contribution or pension plan. There are governance processes in place to ensure that fees are negotiated, yep, at the best level possible, that services provided are at the highest level possible, right? So it's not like a set it and forget it and you just kind of walk away. There are committees of people within these states, yep, within these municipalities that offer these sourced services.
Yep, you're spot on that, Jeff. And actually, in every instance, the board that oversees these programs, they are fiduciaries on behalf of the participants. They have to act in the participants' best interests. And what we know, I mean, you know, we hold our fiduciaries to a prudent standard. And while I know there's some discussion, well, maybe the auto IRAs may or may not be, you know, exempt from ERISA. I think it's, you know, the courts have certainly ruled that we are. But I think that, you know, you have to look at it and understand that these boards, again, have to operate in the best interest of the participants. They're making those decisions as a best, you know, industry standard and sort of best practices. We're looking at those same kind of high standards of service that you would expect of any, as you said, defined contribution or defined benefit plan. So, you know, and a really important part of serving as a fiduciary is having good governance processes. And I can assure you that, you know, the clients that we have been privileged to work with really take that responsibility very seriously. Governance is about process, right? It's about making the decisions, making sound decisions, getting advice when you need them, you know, external advice when you need it, but fully understanding that ultimately you are responsible to deliver a program that is in the best interest of your participants. And I, you know, I'm happy to say I see that in performance every single day that I work with my clients.
Last question, and I hope you don't mind. I wanted to shift gears real quick to just getting a quick update on 529 plans, because student loans, student loan debt is at its highest. There's a challenge of the pandemic, but just real quick, state of the 529, I was going to say apparatus, but 529 plans around the United States, how are they doing with respect to solvency? Maybe that's the wrong word, but contributions.
Yeah. So 91 plans around the country, and, you know, some $370 billion in assets under management across more than 14 million accounts, Jeff. I think that we've come through this pandemic really well. I mean, at least the anecdotes from my clients, we've not seen a run on the programs. We've, you know, I think for the folks that are saving, they're in that position that every dollar you save is one less dollar you have to take on in debt. You know, I think the 529 plans, again, to me, they're our beacon on the retirement side. I think they've done a very good job in trying to offset the real pressures of student loan debt, because we know that the more you're in debt, the more you have to delay important life decisions, you know, buying a home, getting married, doing whatever it is. So I think we're feeling good about the 529 plans and where they are. We're feeling like we're serving the people that need to be served. You know, one interesting thing about 529 in the past 2 or 3 years, we have seen Congress expand the uses. And this will be the last thing, because I'm sure we're running out of time, but I want to make that point. You know, in the Secure Act, Congress said, we can use a 529 plan for apprentice programs, apprenticeships, or you know, registered apprenticeship programs. And I think what that recognizes, Jeff, is that a successful career doesn't have to go solely through a four-year public or private university. There are other ways to achieve it. And so as we expand those qualified uses of 529, I think it recognizes that there are other ways to be a successful adult. So
yeah, I couldn't agree. I think we couldn't agree with you more here at the network. And there's so many different ways of success, whether you are go to a four-year school, go to graduate school, or choose the trades. All of them can lead you to success. It really comes down to the individual. Well, Andrea, it's always a pleasure chatting with you. Thank you so much for joining us on the program. And we appreciate your analysis with regards to the state-run systems. Have a great rest of the day, and we'll talk to you again very soon.
Loved doing it. Thanks. Bye.
And that wraps up this episode of BRNAM. Have a topic of interest or someone you think we should talk to? Then drop us a line. And don't forget, for all the news in retirement, markets, technology, personal finance, so much more, check out our daily newsletter, The Morning Pulse. So until tomorrow, I'm Jeff Snyder. Stay safe, keep on saving, and don't forget, roll with the changes.
Are you being audited, and do you owe the IRS $10,000 or more in back taxes? Is the IRS threatening to take more of your money? Don't fight the IRS alone. The Tax Doctor is here to help you negotiate your tax bill and reduce your stress. The IRS can freeze your assets and seize your bank accounts, but you can stop these IRS actions. The Tax Doctor will work with you using our years of experience to represent your case to help you get the best resolution under the IRS guidelines. Help is here to deal with the IRS to reduce your stress. We've handled thousands of cases, so we know what we're doing. If you owe $10,000 or more in back taxes, do not call the IRS alone. Call a Tax Doctor now for a tax emergency analysis.
Call 800-224-6439.